In the pursuit of truth and common sense in an unbelievable world, you're listening to the Right Mind Podcast with your host, Todd Showalter.
Hello, everybody. I'm Todd Showalter, and welcome to Right Mind. Today, my guest is William Brower. He's a Titanic expert. He brings a wealth of information about the Titanic. He's even produced a film that's on the Titanic. He's going to tell us a little bit about it and maybe some things that we didn't know about the Titanic before. William, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Todd, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I always, you know, seriously, I'm a big Titanic buff. I mean, I've always been fascinated by it. I've seen all the movies and everything. How long have you been, studying the Titanic, whatever you're involved with?
Well, this August, it's going to mark 43 years of research for me.
43 years of research. Wow, that's a lot. Okay. And tell us where you are at that point. Have you discovered some gems that we didn't know about before?
There's gems, probably a whole treasure trove. And the one advantage for a subject such as this is the simple fact that almost every few months, whenever there's a new expedition, we're still learning something new entirely.
Okay. First of all, are there a lot of expeditions still going on? I mean, I know when they found it, that was obviously, the big one. Are people just going back to the wreckage over and over again?
Believe it or not, yes. There's actually a group based out in Washington that's called Ocean Gate Expeditions. It's going to set you back about $260,000, but you actually go with them and work the expedition.
Right. Well, I'm sure that everybody has that. That's just, death chains, I'm sure. So, how many people do they normally get to do that? I was kidding, by the way. How many people do they normally get to do that? I mean, is that an ongoing thing?
Yeah. It actually officially kicked off just a couple of years ago. And, they get a whole group of people together and, you're out there for about a week and everybody has a chance to dive the wreck. And, you actually are working the expedition. So you're taught how to work the radar, the sonar, and things along those lines. So,
so you get to be discovered all over again while you're undiscovering $260,000. I got it. Gotcha. Well, as far as like the things, I mean, we all know the story, it hit the iceberg. I mean, obviously I forgot how many people actually drowned. As far as like the story that we see, whether it's with James Cameron's version or National Geographic, what is the real truth? I mean, is there more fiction than nonfiction involved?
Well, for the most part, that would depend on the perspective. The biggest part where they do have the fictional aspect is actually the third class being locked behind these gates.
What do you mean by that? What's that?
Well, like you see in Cameron's film, where you see these iron gates and they're all trying to fight for it. And they rip up the bench to smash it open and things to that effect.
Oh, you mean like when they were trapped? When they were trapped?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, okay. So what about that? You mean, so that wasn't real or it was real?
No, that was not real at all. That was more creative licensing than anything else.
Okay.
For the most part, the kind of gates that typically were seen on board Titanic were basically almost like what you would see on a subway stall. I mean, it would barely just come above waist level and it would just say, first class only, do not enter, but you can easily climb over to. But on the night of the sinking, all of those were opened up. They were encouraged to come out. But one of the biggest factors, though, within that situation was that Titanic carried two onboard translators for French and Italian. And there were over 700 steerage passengers. So we have everything from the Middle East, China, all the way through.
So it was a very diverse crowd, unlike the society crowd that is usually portrayed. So, I mean, it was supposedly unsinkable. All right. Mm-hmm. So, and apparently the iceberg, which it tore through what, like an air pocket or something that it was. I mean, if it's unsinkable, what exactly? I know it filled up with water. Everybody knows how that works. But I mean, what did they overlook that, you know, caused this unsinkable ship to sink?
Well, there were two factors that kind of worked against it. It wasn't like a full rip, like we would imagine. And what it was actually, it's called a glancing blow. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, think of it like a fender bender. You know, you nail the corner of somebody else's rear bumper, and you kind of spin, kind of swerve slightly in the impact. If that makes sense to you.
Yeah. Okay. So you're basically, as opposed to like a huge accident, it was just more of like a dent or something like that.
Pretty much so. Yeah. What it did was it actually buckled the hull plates.
Okay.
Along the side of the ship.
Yeah.
Because you know, the way the ship was designed was all done by riveting.
Okay.
All right. You know, so that's basically you know, think of just good old fashioned welding bolts together over sheet metal, but on a much larger scale.
All right. So that it really, I mean, by today's standards, it was sinkable, and it obviously was sinkable. Because anything like that happened today, you think?
Well, I mean, anything's possible. You know, right. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, there's no such thing as an unsinkable ship. Yeah. So,
we
can always hope.
But what, you know, some of the things, I mean, we know we were talking before we began the show about Molly, you know, the unsinkable Molly Brown. There's some, you know, some big characters that were associated with the Titanic. Are there any stories, you know, that are out there about the ship itself, or maybe some of the passengers or even the crew that haven't been explained yet or portrayed yet? Any mysteries?
Well, not fully mysteries, but there's always lots of fascinating stories. You know, for myself, that's one of the things that's always you know, intrigued me the most when it comes to researching the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I guess one of the best examples that I could give you would be one by the name of Thomas Biles, who was a Catholic priest on board, and. He was actually coming to America to actually officiate his brother's wedding.
Okay.
And so, you know, where it gets interesting about him is the fact that on the day of the disaster itself, you know, because of his position of being a man in the cloth, he was allowed to travel amongst the classes.
Okay.
And so he went down into third class, and that particular Sunday morning, he delivered a sermon basically calling for a spiritual lifeboat to help maneuver you through the troubled waters of society.
Hmm. Okay.
12 hours later, he would last be seen standing on the deck of the stern, leading people in prayer in the final plunge.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. That's
a little foreshadowing, so to speak. Have to watch the message the next time I go to church. Make sure it doesn't happen in 12 hours.
Exactly.
Always want to do that. What? Okay, so we've got that. What the time duration? How long when it actually hit? I've heard, you know, again, I've seen the movie and stuff, but it's been a while between the time it hit and when it actually totally sank. What kind of time frame was that again? Was that like
2 hours?
And 2 hours?
2 hours, 40 minutes.
2 hours, 40. Okay, is anything like, you know, nowadays that, you know, as a result of that? The, you know, what type of preventative measures have been taken that so that something like that can't happen again?
There have been countless preventative measures. One of the biggest ones, and you know, this is where we get some of the misconceptions,
mm-hmm.
is the lifeboats. See, right. When Titanic was built, what she was doing, she was actually following what's called the British Board of Trade. Okay, so this is kind of like the early version of the FAA and a lot of the other regulatory, you know, positions that are around these days.
Okay, so it's like a government organization that regulate, okay, with the lifeboats in this situation.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, and so in this case, though, what happened was the Board of Trade met very irregularly, and they also never anticipated the Industrial Revolution that kicked into gear by the late 1890s.
Mm-hmm.
So what they would do was they would actually measure the ships and lifeboat capacity by the cubic space instead of by the amount of passengers and things along those lines.
Oh.
So the general rule was that any ship that was going to be 10,000 tons was going to carry 16 lifeboats.
Hmm.
That was a worldwide regulation up to that point. So, you know, when Titanic came into service, She had the 16 that were required, but they also added 4 additional collapsible lifeboats. Mm-hmm. So in the eyes of the regulation at the time, she now exceeded what was required.
Okay. Which is typical government work. That's, you know, it's not going to work. Okay. So you, they had basically then, you know, 20 lifeboats, but then how many people are on the ship?
2,208.
2,208 for, and you had 20 lifeboats. Yeah, that's definitely government work. So now, I mean, by what do they do now? I mean, so it is based obviously what by the people, how many people are on board, right?
Correct. Yeah. Right. Now there's lifeboats for everybody. And, okay. You know, even life jackets and everything else was all literally thrown straight into the limelight within the first couple of weeks following the disaster.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, now other ships have sunk. Okay. So, I mean, what do you think the big thing about the Titanic is? Why is there such a aura of around it that, you know, people are just, you know, they're drawn to it and they want to know about it and they become intrigued and like yourself have researched it for over 40 years. What do you think that is?
Well, I think what it is, it's the stories of the people themselves. Okay. You know, 9 times out of 10, these are all everyday working people, things along those lines. And, you know, it's almost like, in one sense, in the philosophical sense, okay, this is like somebody telling you, you have less than 3 hours to live out the rest of your life. What actions are you going to do? You know, and then, you know, from there, it's just a matter of what it is that you would decide to do. Would you run the risk, try to stay on board as much as you can? Do you go with the others, try to get into a lifeboat? What would you do if your life was in peril with less than a three hour window?
Okay, so these people basically knew that that's what it was. As soon as they hit, they know this is it. You know, it's over. And so they had basically, you said, 3 hours to figure out what was going to go on. So, I mean, we've always heard, you know, women and children first. I mean, were there any stories about that would surprise us?
Well, believe it or not, that was strictly only on one side of the ship.
What do you mean? And
basically, you had two officers in charge of evacuating the lifeboats. One was First Officer Murdoch, who was actually on duty at the time of the collision. Mm-hmm. And then his second officer, Charles Lightoller. Lightoller was always been known more as being more of a military man, but he would later have an exemplary career in World War II as well, too. Mm-hmm. So when the order was given for women and children first, Lightoller took it as actual fact, direct order. That's it. Murdoch, however, knowing the situation, would allow men on board the lifeboats if there was room available still, and if anybody wanted to get on board.
Yeah, so, well, you would have with 20 boats and like over 2,000 people, I would have thought, you know, women and children would have pretty much taken them all, wouldn't it?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, the other problem that comes into the play with the situation is that the rate of the flooding of the ship, okay, it was such a minimal amount at first, in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. That it was almost impossible to convince people to leave in the early lifeboats. So it was almost an hour before once the ship finally sunk low enough that they realized there was a problem. But during that first hour, the general consensus is, you know, why do you want us to go into a rowboat in the middle of the ocean? It's 28 degrees outside. The water's below freezing. Mm. You know, the lights are on deck. There's music playing. The heaters are on. They're serving drinks. They're bringing out cocktails, chocolate. Mm. Why leave that for bare, frigid temperatures?
All right. So you have a bunch of people that just didn't take it seriously then at that point. Right. Okay. Until it was too late. So you're saying in the interim, and the people that did, there were like, you know, men and women and everybody like that were taking it seriously and getting on the boats? Is that what it was?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That makes more sense. Okay. All right. Now you said you're doing a film or you're working on a film. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I actually had the privilege of working on a film. It was called The Last Signals.
Okay.
And this actually came out as a YouTube film through Mr. Tom Linsky, who had wrote, produced, and directed it. And, you know, it's one of those cases, I have to admit, it's a very small world. It's amazing to see you know, how a creative mind works. And, you know, for myself, also being an author, I can appreciate this. For the 100th anniversary, I actually had allowed my collection of memorabilia to go into my town's museum. So I had a full 2-month exhibition. Uh-huh. So, you know, I also wanted to promote as much of possible, you know, any other events or things along those lines, you know, just to be a part of the community and kind of work as much as often as a team effort and collaborative. So lo and behold, I found this set tour of the Marconi room, which is the radio room that the operators were working on.
All right.
And it blew my mind away, the level of detail of this, that I thought it was a large budget studio project. So, you know, I messaged Mr. Linsky about it, compliment the designer and things along those lines. And then comes the ironic part, which is the lo and behold, that was all done in his parents' basement. And all that part was everything that on film there is just, you know, him and some of his friends doing it themselves with zero budget.
Oh, really? Okay, so they built all this stuff themselves? Okay.
Yeah. You know, and then even flooded his parents' basement for the
sink. Oh, they flood. Well, that must have really gone over well. Okay, then you follow that movie with another one called The Great Escape, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, right. Fantastic motorcycle scene in that one, too.
Yeah, I can only imagine flooding. Hey, Mom, Dad, we're going to flood the basement, but hey, it's for the film. You got to go along with it. No,
exactly.
Now, you say you've got, you mentioned you have memorabilia. What kind of memorabilia do you have?
I have a few pieces of the ship itself.
Really? Now, how did you get? What are these things just readily available now? Because it was I remember when this all first went down. Pardon the pun, went down. But when it first, you know, it was found, discovered, and there was a big, huge, like museum tour at one of the big museums here, actually in St. Louis. And, you know, there's a big line to get in to see it. And you'd see these things that were actually on the boat. But now, are you saying, like, you've got them? And can anybody just have a piece of the Titanic nowadays?
You can if you know the right people and you have the right funds. Because if it's pre-disaster, you're allowed to buy it. But if it's something that was recovered from the wreck, that is all federally protected.
Really? Okay. Now tell me. All right. So the stuff, what do you have? I mean, do you actually have memorabilia from the disaster?
I do. Yes.
Wow. Okay. Well, what kind of stuff do you have? I mean,
I have like a small block of wood testing out the ship's engines in Belfast.
Wow.
And you know, I have some original postcards from when it was first launched.
Okay.
And, you know, other than that, the rest are replica things, but it's China sets from the last dining saloon and the a la carte.
Okay. You
know, yeah. And all, most of that all came, you know, in a lot of ways. I always say that my house is almost the wayward home for Titanic memorabilia because most of my friends and colleagues, you know, come, you know, all the holidays and things like that. They're like, hey, I saw this at the store. I don't think you have this.
Really?
There's one. Yeah.
Well, no, wait. Okay. So the stuff at the store, though, that's replica stuff, right? I mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. There's not like an aisle now at the store with. No, I'm kidding you. Well, so anyway, so you've got all this stuff and you're lending it to museums. What is the extent of your collection? I mean, how many pieces would you say you have?
Well, my inventory spans over 600 pages.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's literally 43 years of collecting. So, you know, that's everything from some of the original postcards, original newspapers, China sets. I have 3 out of 4 of original memorial books, replica steamer blanket, replica deck chair, replica officer's whistle. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Pardon the pun.
Oh, see, we're being punny here. I already made that.
We are.
That's okay. So, yeah, all right, you said over 40-something years. What was it that really sparked you to, you said, wow, this really got my attention, that made you want to, you know, spend the next 40 years researching and studying this?
Well, that's actually the fun part. When I was growing up, I used to spend a lot of summers with my grandfather. Uh-huh. And so, just like anybody else, you know, obviously, one of those days, you know, he decided we're going to go to the movies, and we missed our original choice. And so as I was walking out, I was 5 years old at the time, and I saw a poster for a movie called Raise the Titanic. Uh-huh. And it's actually a Cold War spy thriller that is still considered a box office bomb to this day. Mm-hmm. But the flip side of the coin is two factors. One, it actually opens with archival photos of the real ship itself. And then, you know, it has John Barry, who was famous for doing the James Bond films, did the composition for the film's theatrical score.
Okay.
So, you know, I always had an interest in, you know, deep sea research and things like that, because I'm in South Florida. And mm-hmm. so scuba diving, snorkeling, and things like that are all in my nature. And,
oh, yeah.
And well, then on top of that,
I'm bragging now. I'm in St. Louis where it's 20 something degrees. But hey, back to you. So yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then on top of that, I'm also a Pisces, the fish. So
okay. So it was in the cards, so to speak, that you were going to do this. You went with your grandfather to a film, and that sparked it. You see, you thought, hey, I got to know more about this, huh?
It did. And so, you know, the whole ride home, I started asking him, you know, was that a real ship? Was that a real person? Did this really happen? And, you know, he saw that I was developing a genuine interest. And so we stopped off at the bookstore on the way home, and he bought me the book, A Night to Remember, which even now to this day is still considered one of the best introductory books for someone that wants to get into the subject.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, from that point forward, since I was still learning how to read at the time, you know, he would read me a chapter per night before bed. And then over the following summers, you know, he incorporated aspects of Titanic into life lessons, you know, social etiquette at the dinner table, how to actually plot and chart your course on navigation, and things along those lines.
Okay. So you're great. Was he a big buff too then when it comes to Titanic?
Believe it or not, no. He just remembers when the sinking took place, and you know, he just said that he called it the day the world stopped.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah. I mean, okay. So that got you intrigued, and then just from there on, I mean, it was just you know, one thing after another. Now, have you actually? Because we were talking before about mm-hmm. you know, for hundreds of thousands of dollars, people go out and can see this. Have you actually? I mean, been in the area of where the Titanic is? I mean, have you done any of these expeditions?
Not yet. I've been trying since 1986 to hitch a ride.
To a point,
you know, not once, but two different times and on separate parts. Just to have a fun little anecdote here. Uh-huh. When they made the announcement that Ocean Gate was going forward with it, I actually went to my bank at first, and I was like, hey, listen, I'd like to take a loan out, please. And to do this for educational purposes for the benefit of the general public. Uh-huh. And so understandably they said no.
I'm sure that they don't get many requests for that, so I'm sure I would have, you know, considered it just for your originality. Well, you got out of all the other, you know, the other stories, the films, the books you mentioned, A Night to Remember, what is your, if somebody, would that be the book to go to? I mean, are there certain things, if you wanted to know the absolute truth, or as close to it, would that be the book that people should read?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. And how old is that book? That's pretty old, isn't it? I mean,
it is. It was actually published in 1953.
All right. Okay. So, and, well, that's not, yeah, sure. Okay. Now, it went down, what was it, 1912, was it?
1912.
That's what I see. I have certain things stick in my head. By today's standards, I mean, was there were still, I mean, as far as communication and things like that, I mean, you see in the movie they're doing Morse code and all that. I mean, it was that all pretty factual? I mean, were they pretty much limited on how they could contact anyone for help?
Very much so, yes. You know, and in fact, many years ago, there was actually a book that was released that's called Signals of Disaster. Uh-huh. And, you know, if you're a radio buff, this would be up your alley. It's actually every single transmission sent by Titanic both before the sinking and also during it. And it's the correspondence is even on that particular night, understandably, bear in mind, even Marconi and radio communication was still in its infancy. And so there was a lot of confusion back and forth on over the sound waves, too.
Gotcha. And another note I wanted to ask you about, the that brings me back to the actual crew. There were stories. Now, did the captain himself, did he kill himself?
Well, that's one of those things that's always up for speculation. There's always been rumors that an officer committed suicide, but we don't know exactly who.
Okay, but so we don't know if it was actually the captain of the ship, right?
Well, we know who the captain was for sure.
Sure, but he's not the one that killed himself. Didn't he kill himself in the movie or something like that?
No, that was the first officer that did.
Oh, okay.
And even that particular scene brought a ramification along the way as well, too.
Okay. Now, you're a big, as a result of this, I mean, to give you an example, I saw Jaws, way back. Yeah. And I used to be a big ocean guy. I'd swim way out. And then, actually, I was a kid at this point. I saw Jaws, now I go out knee deep and I'm still a little nervous. I'm the same way with the Titanic thing. I have no desire to get on a damn cruise ship, all right? I mean, just thinking this. Have you been on a cruise? I mean, do you have these little, these reservations about ships, or do you feel pretty safe?
Oh, absolutely. I'm actually the most content when I'm out on the ship.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really? Yeah. I always say, every once in a while, if it's one of those crazy days in the office, I'll say I miss a rolling get back to the smell of open air.
Okay. Well, that's probably because, as soon as they say the ship's going down, you'll be one of those first people, and you'll forget about the heat and the cocktails, and you'll be on the darn boat, won't you? Right?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
That's right.
I might take a cocktail with me, though.
There you go. That makes sense. Any last notes before we wrap up here? I mean, it's always fascinating. But the one thing I like about it is, regardless of who you talk to or who you listen to, you always hear some new stories. There's always, it's never the same exact story over and over again. Any things we don't know about that we haven't covered that you'd like to end with?
Yes, I actually, I would. One of my very, very good friends is a gentleman by the name of Cliff Ismay.
Cliff Ismay, okay.
His fifth cousin, actually in the Cameron film and many others, is portrayed as being the villain of the disaster itself in a lot of ways.
Okay.
Well, after almost 5.5 years of working on it, Cliff has actually written and published his book detailing and chronicling his ancestor. And this is the first time in 111 years that the public is going to be able to know exactly more about the man himself versus what we see on television and film.
Okay.
And it's called Understanding J. Bruce Ismay, The Coward of the Titanic.
So he really wasn't the coward then. So he's
correct.
Okay. So he's clearing his name. Gotcha.
And so far, since its release, it has been flying off of the shelves.
Yeah.
Both in England, and then it actually arrived stateside on the 1st of November. And the entire inventory was sold out by the 7th of November.
Gotcha. Wow. Okay. So it's a very popular subject. Is there any way that, is there anything that you would like to promote, or is there any to have people get in touch with you, or do you have a web page? Do you have a YouTube channel? Anything that you would like to have people draw into you? This is your time to plug your stuff.
Well, no problem. And you can find me on Facebook. Just look for William Brower.
William Brower on Facebook. Okay. Yeah.
YouTube channel is actually my channel is named after a Star Wars character. So look for Tessic Fan.
Okay.
TESSEKFAN.
Okay. Okay. Tessic Fan.
Then you can find me on Twitter.
Got you on Twitter. Because, your Facebook stuff, because we're friends on Facebook, you have a lot of Titanic stuff on there. So if people go, they'll be able to, follow some of the new updates, so to speak. Correct?
Precisely. Yes.
All right. Well, hey, it's been a pleasure, And finally, on a final note, don't you think, like in the movie, that don't you think there was room on that board for Jack to, get with, Kate Winslet? I think she was hogging the whole thing. I don't think he had to stay in the water the whole time. Do you?
Well, I mean, I'm glad you asked that because, okay, believe it or not, that's actually a wall panel from the first class lounge. So they could definitely stretch out and lounge out on that thing for hours if they needed to. So
Okay. You proved my point. So she was just being
selfish.
Selfish. Thank you. All right. Well, I bring that up, but it is a serious, you know, thing to notice. Anyway, thanks so much for joining me, William. It's been a pleasure. And I do encourage people to, you know, check out his Facebook page. He does have a lot of neat stuff. We'll be interested to see what comes out down the road. And like you mentioned, what was the name of that book one more time that is flying off the shelves?
It's Understanding J. Bruce Ismay.
Understanding J. Bruce Ismay. That sounds interesting, too. I know I'll be checking it out. Well, thank you very much for joining me today, William.
Well, thank you as well, Todd. It was a real pleasure this afternoon.
It certainly was. I really appreciate it. And I'd like to thank you for joining me, whether you've been watching or listening. This is Right Mind, and I'm Todd Showalter. And remember, if you don't have a right mind, you don't have a mind at all. Till next time, bye-bye.
This has been the Right Mind Podcast with Todd Showalter.